HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 359, recorded live Thursday, January 31st, 2013. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at telerik.com. And by franklins.net, training developers to work smarter. And now offering GesturePack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks to Philip Kelly and Martin Woodward, developers on the project that's brought Git support to Visual Studio.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm on the phone with Philip Kelly and Martin Woodward. And you guys were involved in getting Git into Visual Studio, and I actually did a write-up on my blog last week. That's pretty slick. I did not see that coming myself, Martin. Was this a long time in planning?
Yeah, it's been going a while. I know we spoke a long time ago about version control, and at the time I was telling you that I really want version control to be transparent. And pretty quickly we came to the conclusion that the only way you could do transparent version control is going to be through a distributed version control workflow, because you get a repository on your client machine, so you can sneakily be doing version control behind somebody's back and they don't kind of know it, and then you can just sort of save them when they need you, you know? So, so that was probably the time when we really started looking at it hard. And that's why I kind of went dark for a while there and just dug into this, because I didn't want to promise anything until I knew we could deliver it, and had to go figure out, you know, exactly how we were going to go build this, what we should base it on top of. And then when we came to the conclusion that Git was the way, we had to go figure out, you know, can we go do this? Can we go work with the open source community and improve the support on Windows so that we could include this library that we're using and ship it inside Visual Studio?
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that we supported Mercurial. Some part of Microsoft gave the Mercurial folks money, and historically, Mercurial has been a little bit friendlier to use from the command line on Windows. Mm-hmm. But was it just decided at some point that kind of Git is winning? I don't know if you remember, but back in the day when everyone was using CVS, and then SVN kind of came along and said, look, we're better, we're more refined.
Yeah.
And then the CVS guys just eventually had to realize that it was over. Is the same thing happening to Mercurial? Like, it's always going to be a niche, but it didn't win? It's the Betamax of...
The Mercurial command line is certainly easier to use, you know? I find it more easy to use. It's more version control. You know, Git's more kind of... It's a workflow tool for handling files in a directed acyclic graph, which is how, you know, DBCS tools store history. And you can do version control with it if you pick the right workflow. But whereas Mercurial is definitely built ground up as a version control tool. But when we were actually looking at it, the Mercurial architecture, it's also Python-based and stuff. And when we were looking around the market, we were... You know, Git has won in terms of adoption. It's definitely, you know, the adoption curve of Git is accelerating a lot quicker than the adoption curve of any other distributed source control tool. And more interestingly, every other distributed version control tool that isn't Git is, you know, kind of building Git interoperability into it via, you know, fast import, fast export type of ways of porting the repository over. Or at the network layer as well, they're also introducing compatibility with Git. So that was interesting to us. Another data point was Git is being used as a deployment protocol more and more. You know, like developers FTP. I think you mentioned it in your blog post, actually.
Yeah, you know, FTP for code.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like Azure websites, you can push up a Git repo to get it to deploy. You know, you can do the same with AppHarbor and Heroku and Facebook and things like that. So that was fascinating. So now we're coming to the conclusion that in any DBCS tool that we were able to bring to the market not only needed Git interop, but it needed to speak Git on the network layer. And, you know, Philip can talk more about like how Git transports stuff over the network layer. But basically, it just sends the Git repository over the network. A bunch of pack files go over the network, and it is very much the raw Git repository that gets sent around. So now we're dealing with the Git repository, and we're dealing with, you know, Git compatibility. We might as well just go build Git, you know, and go integrate Git in. And the only argument that people would give you against doing that is that they say, you know, the Git support on hasn't traditionally had as good support on Windows. So, you know, we're Microsoft. We can fix that. So let's go fix that, and let's make it better for Windows developers and for Visual Studio developers rather than try and compete.
Well, surely some vice president somewhere must have said that's not going to happen. Like, that's a bad idea. Like, they must just because, right? They would just say, well, we don't want to support. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's always this Microsoft, we'll just do it ourselves kind of thing. Or at least in, you know, 20 years ago there was. Is that over? Are you guys really, I mean, do you feel like, I guess you have your boss is Brian Harry, right? He's the guy in charge of version control.
Yeah, I think if it hadn't been, Brian Harry is the guy in charge of version control for Microsoft, mm-hmm. And his group kind of owns all the IP around version control. If this idea had come out of a different group, then maybe there could have been politics at play. But I think because it was, you know, the people, we're all source control nerds over at the TFS mm-hmm. team. So because it was the source control nerds coming up with the idea, I think they kind of, you know, trusted us. mm-hmm. And it's been one of those strange ones where we kept expecting pushback. And then every time we would go to some meeting and show some people what we were thinking of doing, thinking they would tell us that we're crazy, they would just go, wow, that's awesome. That's cool. Go for it. Why don't you do it sooner, sort of thing. And we were like, oh, okay, let's go do it.
Interesting. When I first heard about this, I thought, okay, I guess TFS goes away now, and we just sort of accept that Git has quote unquote won. Huh. But then I started thinking about it and realized, and actually, I think it was Brian Keller that explained this to me, that TFS is not just version control; it's actually a whole pile of, you know, ALM, application lifecycle management stuff, and bug fixes and a workflow and agile tools and all these things. And source control is one aspect of it. And your guys' goal was to take the good stuff about TFS and then make version control more pluggable. And Git was the one that you know, the alternative. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that right?
Well, it was more. So I think one of the problems we've got is people associate TFS, the word TFS, with TFVC. We think of it as the version control component inside of TFS. So, but people think of TFS as just the version control component, because as a developer, that's the thing that's most visible to you, especially if there's a bit of friction there in terms of doing version control.
That's what I think. I mean, if I hear TFS, I hear centralized, big, slow version control.
Exactly. Yeah, well, so I'll go for centralized version control. How about that? So, and there's always going to be the need for centralized version control. In the next decade, centralized version control isn't going away. You know, there are repository types that it's well-suited for. There are customer workflows that it's well-suited for. So, you know, that's there. And we introduced in 2012 local workspaces, which is, you know, we've always had the traditional check-in, check-out kind of workflows that works for some people and gives friction for others. So we introduced local workspaces in 2012, which is, you know, allows you to, you don't have to check the files out first. It's an edit commit model. So you don't have to check the files out first. You can just edit them. And so if you're editing files outside of Visual Studio, if you're editing them in Notepad or whatever, or, you know, Sublime Text, it just works. And then you just commit them in and that's good. Mm-hmm. So that's great. So now that's kind of like, you know, call it like the source safe model and the SVN model. You've now got, you know, workflows you've got available to you with TFS. So then we had a think, and it's like, well, what's next? And obviously distributed version control workflows are the next exciting thing. But the thing about DVCS is it's a completely different way of thinking about version control to centralized version control. As you know, it's almost like the switch from, you know, for a version control nerd, it's almost like the switch from object-orientated programming, you know, back from functional programming. You have to think about it very, very differently in your brain. And we did some experimentation where we tried to, you know, rather than have a separate repository type, a Git repository type. We tried some experiments where we kind of bridged it, you know, and kind of made TFS look like a DBCS, or trying to make a DBCS look like TFS at the network layer. But the problem with that is it just becomes a leaky abstraction. There are concepts which are completely different in distributed version control, you know, like the way you do branching. The way you store history is not linear in a DBCS, so that's completely different to centralized version control. And then in centralized version control, you have all this control around path space security and blah, 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 and that doesn't map well into DBCS tools either. So, yeah, rather than force people down one workflow, which we believe to be the blessed workflow, we wanted to give people the choices of workflow. And more importantly, allow people to use different workflows, but use the same set of work items and the same set of tasks and defects and test cases and build automation and agile planning. Use those same tools, the same data, but be able to link them to both TFS check-ins and Git commits.
The point that you made at the beginning where Mercurial and other DVCSs are unapologetically source control systems, while Git is this, like you said, directed acyclic graph, or this kind of like this file system on top of a file system that you can use as source control if you want to. It could cause some people to say, "Oh, well, this is so complex. Git is so complicated that I couldn't go and make a GUI on top of it."
Hmm.
You know what I mean? So you could make a GUI, a UI, on top of a version control system, and it's been done for years. But some people could argue that to really have the full power of Git, you need the command line. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, and you really need the command line if you really want to do the craziness that you can do, mm-hmm. and have the ultimate power. But that's always been the case with version control. The command line for version control has always been more powerful than the GUIs. The GUIs just give you a nice user-friendly way of doing the, 90% operations, commit, push, mm-hmm. Rebase, whatever. But when you actually come to do something, well, we haven't got UI for this yet, but I quite like to do some rebasing or do some squashing of my local commits before I push them up to the repository, because I like my again, Philip can probably comment on this more. When we commit to, say, an open source project like libgit2, we really craft our commits and really take a lot of time over the craftsmanship of our commits, almost like a mathematical proof of the problem. We want to push them up in a logical way so that when somebody reads the commits in order, they can see the conclusion we came to and why the code is structured in the way it is, rather than just giving them the snapshot, which is the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to have that very, very fine level of control, then yeah, you can drop to the command line, which is why we had to make it essential that the Git implementation inside Visual Studio wasn't like proprietary Git, wasn't anything particularly amazing. It's just Git, and we just provide a nice, friendly, useful way of using it inside Visual Studio, and nice, friendly merge tools, nice, easy ways of branching and switching branches. And if you make changes on the command line, it just magically picks that up inside VS instantly.
Well, and that gives me a great segue over to Philip and his work, because you said it's not proprietary Git. It's not like Microsoft Git, which would be evil. It's built on top of something called libgit2, which is an open source library. It's actually a GPL library with a linking exception. It's written in C?
It is. It's written in C, and it's completely portable. So, this is using the same library on Linux and on Mac and on Windows, in effect. This is the library that GitHub is using in their clients for Windows and for Mac as well. So, we're sharing code, and we're progressing together on adding features and completeness into the libgit2 library.
Okay, so this is portable C, works anywhere, and this is the thing that most folks right now are using to talk to Git. I mean, you don't edit the files yourself. You talk to that API, and then it handles things.
You know, I would say it's up and coming, actually. Git.exe or Git on Linux is a separate code base, And many of the contributors, though, to that Git project have agreed to relicense their work into the libgit2 project, including Linus Torvalds. You know, his work there is free for us to use in the libgit2 project. Libgit2 is adding, what it adds to Git is the ability to host it as a library inside of a larger program like Visual Studio. Git, the actual command line, just comes up and does its work and then goes away. The process terminates. So that's what some of the advantages of libgit2 that we get.
And so libgit2, it's a native Git implementation. It's not a Microsoft thing. And then there's a thing called libgit2 sharp. Whose is that? Who owns that?
That's a set of bindings. That's a set of bindings. I guess it's also something that we contribute to, that that GitHub contributes to, and it's something that I guess just also some independent developers from around the world contribute to. And it's bindings for libgit2 that allow you to use the power of libgit2 from C Sharp, which is, you know, the language that we know and love to work in at Microsoft. It's a simple, you know, managed language, right? So we don't have to take care of all the problems of freeing memory and everything. We get garbage collection, and it's fast to develop in. So it's great that we have libgit2 sharp bindings for libgit2 to use.
So you're writing code, Philip, yourself, in both C and C sharp, because you're writing code in Visual Studio to make the UI and make things work, but then you're also contributing in C and libgit2.
Right, we've got three layers to it, right? You have our proprietary Git provider and V6 tools that we just released, and then they include libgit2 sharp, which is really just a wrapper around libgit2. There's not a whole lot of logic and business logic in libgit2 sharp. Libgit2 is the meat of the problem. It's, you know, it's the C library that does all the work.
Okay. VSIX, this is a Visual Studio extension. This is the thing that people will install, and it will keep itself updated. It comes out of the Visual Studio gallery. And this is what gives you, in Solution Explorer, all of the kind of the context and the, this is a new item and this is a dirty item and this item needs to be committed and all that kind of stuff. And then puts Git inside of Team Explorer, which is where I'm used to seeing TFS stuff. Is that right?
That's right. Team Explorer is your hub for using Team Foundation server. It's got you know, your work items page, your pending changes page, your builds page, settings, and so once you've installed the Git tools V6 on top of Visual Studio with Update 2 installed, you get the pending changes page replaced by the Git changes page when you're using a solution that's part of a Git repository. So. If you're using a solution that's part of that's in a TFS version control workspace, then you'll have the same experience that you have with Visual Studio without the Git tools. You'll have the regular TFS pending changes page there.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this is probably not your space, but just out of curiosity, if I install this update to the Visual Studio 2012.2, right now it's a preview. Will it tell me later to update to the final version?
Yeah, so this is Martin. Update to CTP does just update itself. It just works. It is a CTP, though. So, you know, while it will update and you can update to the RTM version, it is a CTP. So beware, you are using the latest and greatest bleeding edge bits.
Okay, cool. Because I know that we're installing pre-release stuff here, and I don't want to take the chance that I'm going to mess up my machine.
No, you shouldn't have to repave your machine or anything. But there might be bugs in there that we didn't know about.
Okay. And then when I install the Git stuff, it's not going to go and install a bunch of stuff in the GAC and mess up my machine. It's just a VSIX that I can uninstall just by going into tools and extensions and just right clicking and say uninstall. It's not scary or dangerous.
Yep, it's just basically a zip archive, and it contains the right code. It gets put in the right place, and it also contains libgit2, libgit2 sharp, and it also contains the source code for libgit2 if you wanted to go look at the source code without looking at it straight on GitHub. It's got everything in there.
Okay, cool. Now, one of the things that I have noticed myself, and this is to Philip, when I'm doing work in Git and Visual Studio, I usually go out to the PowerShell, and I use a tool called PoshGit, PowerShell Git extensions by Keith Dalby and friends. And I will go and I'll do updates, or I'll switch branches over in my command line, and then I'll find that Visual Studio will freak out and get confused, and I have to go and reload my project, and sometimes windows that are open get confused. So kind of switching things out from underneath Visual Studio tends to confuse stuff. And I'm curious, now that you're going to be switching branches in multiple places, either from within VS or at the command line, do we do anything to make that suck less?
Yeah, we do have some magic that we apply when you change branches from inside Visual Studio. And we're not going to be able to apply it when you're changing it from outside of Visual Studio. But when you're changing it within Visual Studio using our branch picker to change branches, we save all your window positions and we automatically reload the projects. And if the solution changed, we'll reload the whole solution. All the items which got changed, which were different between the branch that you were on and the branch that you then switched to. So you shouldn't notice anything, and it should appear as if nothing really happened. Your files, you know, reloaded automatically. If you had some dirty buffers in the editor, then I think we probably ask you to save those before we change the branch.
Oh, okay.
And, of course, if there's a conflict, you know, if the file that you have an edit on is different in the branch you want to change to, you'll get a message saying, hey, you can't change branches because this file is different over there. You would lose changes by doing so. You need to make a stash if you want to save them.
And
so go ahead.
Are you historically Microsoft kind of tends to move a little slowly, but I understand that you guys are doing things a little differently now. And are you going to be releasing stuff more often? I mean, if there's bugs or weird things, I know there's one guy commented on Twitter that he found the whole carriage return line feed handling confusing. Are we going to wait 9 months for a fix on that stuff like that? Or is this going to update itself often?
It'll be far less than 9 months, Scott. It's going to be, I think we're trying to release just every few weeks. So I'm not sure exactly when our second release is going to be. Our first one obviously was yesterday. And, but I know it's going to be within the next couple months, and probably sooner than that, I'm hoping, that we can get updated bits out there. Because I know we have bugs. We've found and fixed three or four already, and the reports are coming in of things that just aren't quite right, or people are asking for new features and stuff like that. And we're really excited to get back to work of getting these things fixed for people, and we want to get those fixes out to people as soon as we can.
Yeah, I think I had heard, maybe it was from Martin, that that you guys are doing sprints. You're doing Scrum internally.
We do. Yeah, we work in 3-week sprints, and so we update our cloud service every 3 weeks. We, I guess, don't really have to. That's on a locked cadence. The cloud service gets updated on tfs.visualstudio.com. Mm-hmm. We're not really locked to that for the provider. We could, we could release it whenever we want to. So it'll just show up in the V6 extension gallery. So we're working out internally what that schedule is going to be, how frequently we're going to do it. But it's going to be much, much more frequent than updates have gone out for before.
Yeah, the plan is roughly every sprint boundary we'll push a new version. But occasionally, if we spot a really nasty bug or a bug that a lot of people are running into, then we might want to push one out sooner. Or if we want to take a if it's been a big change to the upstream library that we want to sync up with. I know one of the guys is currently working on SSH support, for example, over in Libgit 2. I mean, and that's pretty cool. So that'd be a great thing that we want to pull in, but that's a large piece of intellectual property, the lawyers call it, that we want to pull in. So when we take big contributions, new contributions into the upstream library, we need to go do some lawyery stuff and just double check all the IP stuff there before we can ship it. So that might sometimes delay a release just to make sure we've got all the paperwork done.
Actually, speaking of lawyery stuff, Philip is working on Libgit 2, which is committing open source code and doing pull requests to an external, not Microsoft managed GPL'd licensed product, and then also committing code to a Microsoft product inside the company.
Yep.
Is that becoming more common, or is that weird? Does that put Philip in some kind of weird legal world where he does or doesn't work for Microsoft?
Nope. Philip's a full-time engineer working for Microsoft Corporation. We had to do a bunch of work in terms of making sure, from an IP point of view, that everybody was happy with that. And so yeah, we've done a bunch of work there, and we've done a bunch of work to also make sure that the source code for libgit 2 stays in libgit 2, and that people don't, you know, see that source code and accidentally think, oh yeah, cool, this is a bit of random Microsoft code, I can just copy paste it into, you know, the Windows code base or something like that. We deliberately keep the libgit 2 code in the libgit 2 project up on GitHub, and when we check in a binary build of libgit 2 into the main Visual Studio code base so that people don't get confused.
So it's just it's not like revolutionary anymore, you know what I mean? I guess like maybe I'll just, when people come on the show and start talking about working on open source code at Microsoft, I'll just stop making a big deal out of it, because I don't know. I mean, we do it a lot in the Azure and web team, but when I hear about other teams doing it, I'm like, gosh, yeah, you know, how are you pulling this off? Because I know that I have literally had conversations with groups of people at Microsoft where they'll call me and they'll say, my boss doesn't want us to use jQuery. And I'm like, we ship it. Like, it's supported. Relax. Like, no, it's open source. I'm like, oh, you're missing the point.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously different groups have different exposures to this. Developer division, you know, our customers are developers, so we're generally a bit more cool with this kind of thing. You know, a lot of the work you guys have done has paved the way for some of the things we did. We did push boundaries here. You know, this was, there's a mixture of licenses in the code base. There's GPL v2 code with this linking exception. There's, you know, LGPL code. There's lots of BSD code, MIT code. There's all sorts of stuff in there. There's code that people thought was licensed, you know, correctly and sent over. And then when we did some digging, turned out we forgot to go ask the guy. So we had to go chase down the guys, make sure that they were cool with it being in libgit 2. And yeah, it's been, you know, it's been a non-trivial piece of work, but it's been work that everybody's been incredibly supportive of. And, have realized the importance of not just to Microsoft, but also to the wider development community. And so everyone has been amazingly supportive of it. It's been a pleasure to work on.
Have you had any negativity? Has anyone said anything negative about this, other than it's about time?
You know,
some people have said things.
Yeah, it's like, it's the control thing, really, do you think, Philip? Getting people's head around. I remember having, I had a conversation with somebody this morning, and they were like, so how do we get a roadmap agreed for this open source library? How do we, you know, who's the manager we sit down with in a meeting and get them to put stuff on the backlog and things like that? And you have to kind of explain how open source communities work to people.
Mm-hmm.
That's, what do you think? Is that sort of what you saw as well?
Well, I think that some people might perceive, some people who are not using Visual Studio might perceive that this is, that we, Microsoft, think that this is the thing that will bring them back, right? Let's say that someone's just gotten mad and they've rage quitted Visual Studio. And then we come out with this and we feel very happy and we're kind of self-congratulatory and we're like, hey, this is great. And they're like, oh, it's too late, I'm already using Vim or whatever. And they've moved off into their own world.
Yeah.
And my answer is like, well, that's great. Use the editor that makes you happy, but don't hate on the fact that there's a whole bunch of people using Visual Studio that would appreciate this, you know?
Yeah, I don't really. Luckily, you know, I know you get more commenters on your blog than I do on mine, so I don't have to deal with those kind of comments too often. People have just generally been very supportive. In fact, everybody I reached out to, you know, when we were going through the library and talking with libgit 2 guys and talking with the GitHub guys, everybody's just been incredibly supportive. The open source communities, the people who work in open source communities rather than the people that, you know, just use them and talk about them, the people that actually work in them every day,
yeah,
they value contribution over anything else, because there's so many people that just sit and talk and, oh, you should do this, oh, you should do that, and then go away again. If you come with a big gift of code, then you're a good guy. If you come with high quality code regularly, then they start to trust you. And you know, so we just bring high-quality code, hopefully. And that's what folks have been doing, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's really, you nailed it. Like, that's deep. The idea that's fine, you know, talk is cheap, show me the code.
Yep.
Right? I mean, you know, there's the armchair quarterback aspect of things, where it's like, yeah, you know, I'm a user. I do this, I do that. But most open source projects just want help.
Exactly.
And if you're doing something that moves the ball forward, then they'll be cool with you.
Yep. It's, you know, you can come up with a great idea. Show, you know, go implement it. It's open. You go write that and we'll definitely commit it.
Yeah.
And the guys are great. And that's how we... Because, you know, one of the things we need to be able to support this library. Once it's going to get, you know, the Git support will be baked into the next major version of Visual Studio and every single version, including Express. And that means we've got to support it for the next 10 years. So we've got to have a good degree of confidence that we're going to be able to fix the code we need to fix in this upstream libgit2 library and keep it, you know, that people aren't going to, you know, suddenly stop taking our code. And so we needed to build up some trust in the community, but also the community build up trust in us. Mm. So that's why Philip, especially, has been contributing out to the libgit2 for quite a while and, you know, building that trust relationship there. And then we were kind of testing the waters to see how they were reacting to our code coming in. And they were just, again, because, you know, hopefully, I looked at some of Philip's code and it's code I don't understand. It looked good to me. So I was like, wow, yeah, this is good stuff. And they seemed to think it was quite good too. And, you know, they make Philip a committer, and then we got a few other people make committers, and they've just been incredibly welcoming of us. They're really good guys.
Hmm. It's just like you said, Martin, if you move the ball forward, you know, that's all it takes.
But it's also you can't rest on your laurels, you know? we found that yesterday after we'd, you know, we shipped. Like, oh, congrats guys on shipping, guys. Right then, let's look at this.
Yeah, we'd take a break for about one day and then dive right back in.
Right, exactly. I was like, yeah, I always feel bad because, like, I'm like always bug announcer guy, you know? Like, I'll always, like, I called your guys, as I called Jamie, and I was like, hey, congratulations, you should feel really great. And here's 12 bugs and things that I don't like, and da da da. And it's like, and I'm always feeling guilty. I'm like, oh, what am I doing? It's so mean. I should, you know, who am I? I didn't do anything, you know, I didn't write any of this stuff. But here's, you know, here's a bulleted list of things I don't like anyway.
That's the point of the preview. That's why we released it. So we're grateful for those bugs, and we're going to take them and hopefully fix as many as we can for the next release and do this, keep doing that same thing as we add features, because we'll make even more bugs as we get rebase in there and we get SSH support and all those things that Martin was talking about that are coming.
Yeah. Well, one thing I will tell you guys that I'm really impressed with is that I was afraid that I would have to buy into the entire way of thinking of this Git provider. Like, I would, it's like in the sense of I had to pick the command line or GitHub for Windows or Visual Studio's Git support. And I can say that in the couple of days that I've been using it, I've been able to switch around just fine. And I'm still keeping my PowerShell window open and doing some stuff at the command line, but then I'm doing some stuff in VS. And then occasionally I'll just push sync in GitHub for Windows. And so far, I haven't had any trouble. The only confusion I've had of any kind, which is more of a Git confusion, is understanding how the line endings work, just in a larger sense.
Yeah, we know we have more work to do with line endings, and we look forward to getting that better in the next release too.
Yeah, and I think that's less about like your product and its release, and more about people on Windows just need to better understand GitHub Git line endings. Because I know that all my pull requests in GitHub have all the line endings messed up and all the white space messed up, and kind of getting that right will be a community level thing that everyone will be able to work on.
Yeah,
that's definitely true.
We've done some stuff. There was some issues with CRLF, so line ending conversion in libgit2 early on, and you know, we helped fix those recently. So depending on which tool you're using and which version of libgit2 it was using, it might have had some issues there, but I think they're all more or less
true,
now. But yeah,
PoshGit is also based on libgit2 sharp. Keith Dalby's mm-hmm. stuff, we work with him on that. And so another thing you might need to update.
Well, I go into GitHub for Windows right now and go tools settings, when I'm sitting on a repo, it actually says this repository's line endings aren't normalized. It's saying that about the repository, not about files.
Ah.
And then it says, the best solution is to add the recommended file, which is going to be a Git attributes file, and make a one-time commit to fix line endings.
Yeah.
So they've built that in. Then they've got code that will literally spin through, clean up line endings, make them consistent, do a one-time commit, and then you're all set to go. Might be something we could do too.
I was just having this conversation with Phil just last night, actually. And if you go to File New Project and create a new console application in Solution Explorer, and you say you want it to be added to source control and you pick Git, then we automatically add a Git attributes file for you for line endings, and we also add a Git ignore file for you. You know, it's got all the common stuff, and we actually work with another open source project that GitHub have, which is to build a common set of Git ignore files for people.
Yeah.
There's a new Visual Studio on there that we help with.
Well, that's great. And the point here is not reinventing the wheel, right?
Exactly.
You don't want this Git provider to fight with GitHub for Windows. They should all use the same settings for line endings that are appropriate, the same settings for Git attributes, and the same settings for Git ignore. It's all just love here in the open source world.
And I think we have the Git attributes file maybe wrong in this release. I'm not sure the default one that we have in there. There's some suggestion that we didn't quite get the right setting in there. So I think we're going to be, I know we have an email thread internally looking at that right now.
Cool. Well, this is very cool, guys. This is very exciting. So people can go up and they can Google with Bing or whatever and find this. They need to make sure that they have the update 2 installed. I've got stories up on my blog. They can see Brian Harry's blog. And they can also be rest assured that this is going to be built into Visual Studio in future versions. And then, of course, TFS itself will, both TFS and then the TF versioning system will, continues to live. And now you have choices. You can go centralized. You can go distributed. It's all up to you.
Yep. Thanks for having us on, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
Very cool. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.